Welcome to the Money Insights Podcast, where high income earners go to learn wealth building strategies that will take them from high income to high net worth.
Welcome into another episode of the Money Insights Podcast. We talk all things money and business. I'm your host, Christian Allen, and with me, as always, my co-host, Rodney Zabriskie. Rodney the Pod Zabriskie. I want to make sure we get that. Rod, how are you, my friend?
Hey, I'm doing great in the heat of summer. And I got to tell you, sometimes I'm just grateful for the simple things of life. I'm grateful for AC because...
AC is nice, isn't it?
It's been hot. I took a trip and I'm grateful. I mean, it was a great trip. And it actually wasn't even really all that hot, to tell you the truth. But I sit here in my air-conditioned room recording this podcast, and I'm just like, man, this is living right here.
Yeah, it's not too bad. Okay, so I was in the middle of Utah, right? I took a little trip to a cabin up this last weekend, and it was 108 degrees.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, Arizona's, I know, 115, so I realize if you're from Arizona, you probably don't have a lot of empathy for me. however, I just walked outside for, I kid you not, 2-3 minutes, and I was just like, this is, like, unlivable. And I had my, I had shorts on. I usually wear shorts. I wear shorts all the time. You know that, right? I'm pretty casual that way, but I went out there, and, like, 5-10 minutes later, my legs were, like, red, and they see the sun a lot, so it was bizarre. Anyway, I'm grateful for AC and indoors as well, so thanks for giving us a chance to remember some of the things we're thankful for. Okay, Rod, today we're going to talk money and business, but specifically we are going to throw out what I'm calling the 10-step recipe to financial freedom, okay? 10 steps.
I like it.
You follow it. Here it is. Game, set, match. So if you're wondering how to get there, just listen up. You'll catch it. We'll be ready to rock and roll. So do you have anything that you want to say, Rod, before we jump into the 10-step recipe?
I don't. I think we're going to be, I think have some cool stuff coming.
Okay, we're ready to rock and roll then. Number one. And by the way, the recipe has to be followed in order, right? This isn't just like 10 rules that you need to like live by. This is like in order. This is an actual recipe. Just like when you're baking a cake, you can't do step 7 before you do step 2, right? You've got to go in order. So that said, I'm going to jump into number one. Number one, the most critical, and that's why it's number one, and it is get educated. Okay, so obviously, Rod, you can't do a lot if you don't have the knowledge to do it. So the first step is to get educated in whatever it is that you're wanting to do. In this case, you want to get educated about money. You've got to understand the basics of how money work. You've got to understand some of the terminology. So that really is the first step, right? What do you think are specific things that people ought to be looking into or ought to be thinking about in this first step when, you know, they're brand new to the, maybe they're already income earners, but they've taken this transition from being a high income earner or someone that makes money, but then they're saying, hey, I want to keep it. I want to build wealth. What are some of the things that you think, Rod, need to be considered in this kind of initial phase?
Yeah, I use a phrase often and maybe I overuse it, but you don't know what you don't know, right? So as a starting point, what I would say is just start to immerse yourself in the lingo, right? In other words, if you're brand new, like you just got your lottery, you just got you just finished residency and you're now out in the workforce and doing things, whatever. And you're like, I don't even know where to start, right? I don't even know what compound interest means, or I don't even know what, right? Some of the things that you might think are really pretty basic or pretty common, but for a beginner, it's brand new. So here's what I'm going to say. Get started somewhere, because when you get started, you will feel like there are a lot of things that are thrown out there and it's maybe a little over your head. But as you do it and you just immerse yourself, then it'll become real common, right? Just the thoughts, the way of going about understanding and building on those basic principles. So you can do that through podcasts. There are a lot of good resources out there. I would always recommend someone, if you've never read the book Rich Dad Poor Dad, and it's follow on the cash flow quadrant, start there. That's a great starting point to start to understand.
Can I just say on that, Rod, like, I'm a podcast junkie, right? And
yes,
there's so many people who have had their lives impactfully changed by reading Rich Dad. I feel like that story just gets told over. Well, so here's what it tells me. It tells me that it actually works, right? Mm-hmm. So with so many people saying, hey, reading this book really changed the way that I looked at money and finances, I think that's a really great recommendation. There's a lot of really good books on wealth building too, but from like just a pure, like, that's the one more than any other book that I hear helps people get a different view about how to build wealth. And, you know, it focuses on things like creating multiple streams of income. And again, just thinking about money differently, right? Like, we don't need to go into the whole book philosophy. Most people have an idea of what that is. But like you said, I just think that one, more than any other one single reference, that's what I hear.
Yeah. And as you get started, you don't have to feel embarrassed if some of these things. So I was having a conversation last week with my 21-year-old son, and he's been, you know, just kind of getting involved in becoming a podcast junkie, like you, Christian. So, but
he's going to be a smart
came
cookie,
up,
that one.
I like, well, that. And he came up to me and he's like, hey, you know, I was listening to this podcast, yada, yada. And they talked about, and it wasn't even anything about financial. It was actually one of these like crime things, right?
Oh, true crime. But that's a big thing.
Yeah, one of those. So, but he's like, they brought up like he had to declare bankruptcy and you know, things like that. And so we had this conversation and again, so for me at my stage, it just is something I've encountered a lot. But for him, it's like, I don't even know what this means, right? Like,
yeah, it's
I can
totally
just walk
garbage.
Away from debt. What is this? Or this guy, right? This guy who was a suspect in this crime or whatever, was able to just walk away from all this debt. How does this work? So anyway, don't feel embarrassed if there are things like that you're feeling like terms people are throwing around as if everyone understands it and you have to dig a little deeper to find it.
So, Rod, your advice is to get started, right? Like at some level, you just got to get started. If you can get going, you jump in, that makes a difference. That was my story, right? I've told people I got in the financial services industry because my mom was basically taken advantage of by financial advisors. And so that made me intrigued and interested to actually like dig into it. And that's kind of what got me my start, right? So yes, I agree. Doing something, and usually that's it, right? So if you're someone that already thinks about, you know, wanting to build wealth, like, and maybe you're thinking about a specific topic, right? One of the big topics is real estate. So if you're interested and intrigued in real estate, like, find some books specifically on real estate. Again, Rich Dad Poor Dad is perfect for getting kind of a baseline start in that. I think we could go on and on about getting educated, but you could read the Wall Street Journal, you can listen to podcasts, there's obviously books and material everywhere. If you are looking for a more specific, hey, here's exactly what you should do, Rod and I are certainly more than happy if you email us. We'll be happy to give you some references on that. Okay, but get educated. That's number one. Okay, number two, you got to start saving money. This may sound pretty obvious, but you have to start saving money. You can't invest, you can't build wealth without saving money. Now, if you listen to these real estate podcasts, they'll actually teach you how you can start building wealth without saving money. But you have to do some other things really well in order to make that happen. One of the things that a lot of people will say is you've got to have one of three things in order to be a good real estate investor or to be able to make it work, to make a deal work. You've got to either have the know-how, right, the knowledge, the competence, the work ethic, the ability to put it together, just, you know, you're going to go out there and do it. And then you got to have the money. So those three things, if you have two of the three things, you can usually make it work. Now, that said, at some point, even in that world, the idea is that you're doing that so you can get the money. So regardless of where the starting point is, if you want to build lasting wealth, there's no way around it. You've got to start taking money that you're creating actively or passively and starting to put it away so you can then do even more with it. Is that fair to say, Rod?
Absolutely. Yeah. And the more you build this cycle, we often talk about a few kind of key terms, but one of them is velocity, right?
Yes. 100%.
The, the rate at which you are able to turn that money around and get it into the next deal will accelerate your ability to grow the wealth, right? And again, some of these concepts may just seem like really basic, but getting started, putting money aside is obviously important. As you generate that those streams of that return coming off of the stuff that you're investing in, turn it around and pump it back into the next thing. And the quicker you can do that, the more you'll be able to accelerate the rate at which you grow that wealth.
So what I recommend, what we recommend is if you're a high income earning physician or attorney or whatever, start saving a percentage that you can throw into investment opportunities, right? And that's what most people are, right? Most people aren't full-time investors. And so
right.
In that case, like it becomes even more critical to start saving. Let's say that I'm a physician earning $400,000, $500,000 a year. If I can start saving 20%, 100 grand a year, mm-hmm. Now I can start really doing some powerful wealth building. I can start implementing powerful wealth building strategies. So we recommend saving at least 20% and start moving that into the investment world. And we'll talk about where as we get in further. But for now, just know that you got to get educated and you got to save money. Okay, that brings us into number three. Number three is you've got to surround yourself with experience. This is another critical piece, right? Like one of the biggest challenges that I've found in my career is that getting to the next level almost always has required me to start being around people who do things at a higher level, who do things differently. And it's as much so that I can think differently as it is for any other reason, right? But it's the combination of thinking differently and the know-how and the connections. All of those things come together to be really impactful. But again, if you don't surround yourself with experience, the journey is going to be probably, I was going to say twice as difficult, but it might even be more than that. It might be 10 times as difficult if you don't surround yourself with experience.
Yeah, a good analogy for this, you and I both enjoy sports, and they often talk about the game slowing down, right? So for somebody who's a rookie going into the NBA or whatever, right?
It takes a couple years, right?
Yeah, even though you obviously have to be really good to get signed on to a team in the NBA, it's another level, right? You're moving to that next level, and so it takes time, but you don't speed up. The game doesn't slow down for you if you're
literally
not there,
right?
If you're not in it and with the people who are just competing at that level. And so it likewise with this, it may feel overwhelming when you get started, et cetera, but the more you can surround yourself with people who are there, who are successful, who know what they're doing, then the game will slow down for you.
So in connection with surrounding yourself, right, I think people need to remember that investing and wealth building is a team sport. Okay.
Yeah.
So what I mean by that is that it does require oftentimes people with more experience and sometimes less experience, right? But the idea is that you'll get so much further ahead by surrounding yourself with people who have already done it and people who are like-minded that want to be accomplishing some of the same types of goals and objectives.
Yeah.
So again, that was one of the things that I heard just recently on the Bigger Pockets podcast, and it resonated because I don't know if I had even thought about, you know, specifically in their world, they were talking about real estate investing. And I don't know that I had thought about it as much of a team sport, but it absolutely is. And this is where it starts. It starts with finding the right people to put on your team. If you want to become someone who's ultra successful and build significant wealth, it's as critical as any other part of the recipe.
I like it.
Okay, Rod, we are cruising through. Get educated, start saving, surround yourself with experience. And number four, protect yourself. Okay, Rod, why don't you pontificate on why it would be important for someone to protect themselves inside of this wealth building journey?
Yeah, it's a great question. I've seen and we've seen people who get in and either because of just lack of knowledge or because just not wanting to spend the money. Maybe skipping some steps. And so in this phase, essentially what we're talking about is getting the proper insurance in place, right? And so for some of us, that might just be as simple as reaching out to whoever has your home and auto and saying, hey, what does it take to get an umbrella policy on my policy, on mine?
That's a big one, by the way. So few people actually have umbrella policies. And if you're an investor, a wealth builder, you have to have it. It's so cheap. And you can get so much for so little that it's just a no-brainer, right? I think I have an extra couple million bucks and I probably pay like, you know, 10 bucks a month or something. I don't know exactly, but it's relatively inexpensive and the value you get is so much greater. So I'm really glad you brought that point.
Yep. And so on the insurance side, but then also on kind of the legal side we talked a minute ago about surrounding yourself with experience. Well, surround yourself with professionals who know this space and who can walk you through setting up the right corporate structure, having the different, just the pieces in place so that as you move through the different stages and whatever, right? Everyone will go on their own path, but whatever path you end up on, you have the structure in place. And it doesn't mean that you have to go out and have this enormous structure when you're starting with your very first deal, but at least understanding where you're going with it, right? Having a lot of people, as an example, will have an LLC. It might be kind of like an umbrella LLC, so to speak. And then as you add the different pieces, you're adding it all underneath that, right? You may have it end up with multiple LLCs over time, et cetera, but getting started in the right place and at least having an understanding for where you're going with the structure itself as you build out your investment strategies is critical.
And there's some really practical reasons why, right? Like, it's not just for the fun of it. At some level, the underlying practical reasons are so that you can limit your liability, right? That's why it's called a limited liability company, we want to limit the liability to the extent possible. And so by putting the right structures in place, if something happens that's out of your control or even something that is that just goes wrong, it doesn't have to wreck other parts of your financial world. So when it comes to protecting yourself, that's what it's about. It's about making sure that as you're taking potential calculated risks, that those risks don't suddenly wipe out everything you're doing in, you know, every area of your financial life. And so from a protection standpoint, It's like Rod said, home and auto insurance, it's life insurance, it's the legal structures, it's making sure that you have, you know, your LLC, S-Corp, whatever your business structure needs to be. Mm-hmm. And it's even like your estate planning stuff, right? It's making sure that you have basic wills and trusts in place, because obviously if something happens to you, if you're like us and like most of the people we talk to, care about the rest of their family and the people that will be leaving money to. And so all of those pieces are important. Now, let me be clear. You don't have to spend a fortune on this, right?
Right.
You can, a lot of this is relatively simple. You can go visit an estate planning attorney for, you know, $1,000 or so and get most of the things you want done. And same thing, you can find a CPA or attorney to do an LLC for a few $100. You can even do it on your own if you're not at that place. But either way, just make sure you do it, because again, you don't want to leave open liability and exposure in places where it could come back to bite you. So that's the main piece around protection. Oh, go ahead, Rob.
In either direction, right? Because we live our personal lives as well, right? We're out driving on the road. We're whatever, right? We have a pet or whatever it might be. And so if you're not protecting your investments and or your businesses from the personal side, then that's an oversight as well.
That just reminded me of a story. I think you were probably there with me when you heard this, but we were at a conference for one of these companies years ago, and the guy who was speaking, he talked about, and he was, from what I remember, like a very successful, I don't know if it was executive or advisor, but someone who was, you know, fairly wealthy and very successful. They talked about how their daughter, who was going to school, had like actually hit a person when they were driving, and I don't remember whose fault and all the things that happened, but like I do remember that he actually was sued, right? And again, it wasn't anything he did, right? It was his daughter, and again, his daughter. I don't remember like the fault or all of the main points of the story, but I do remember the primary lesson from it was that there's things that can happen that you just don't even know, that you wouldn't even be thinking about. And again, in this case, think about one of your nearly adult children having some sort of situation. Maybe they're still on your auto insurance, and all of a sudden that's your situation, right? So there's a lot of things that can derail it. The nice thing is there are these ways that we can really easily get around those issues. So planning, preparation, and making sure you're protecting yourself will make sure that you don't have those issues come up. Okay, Rod, I don't want to get too crazy in any one of them, so I'm going to jump in. We're going to keep and go to number five, which is maximize your opportunity fund with the investment optimizer. Now that one, it's pretty specific, right? The core of this is the first step is saving, right? Now the question is, well, once I start saving, where am I going to put my savings, right? Yeah. Like I could certainly just put my money in the bank and save up. And once I save enough money, I could go and invest it. That's certainly better than not saving money, significantly better than not saving money, right? However, what we're suggesting here is that there's an additional layer of efficiency and impact that you can have by just doing things, tweaking it, and creating what we call an opportunity fund. So we talk a lot about and teach this strategy called the investment optimizer. It's a really simple strategy using life insurance where you funnel money into the policy. It generates a 5% tax-free return. You borrow against it. The money stays in there earning interest. You have complete liquidity and can go do things with it, invest your money. And by doing that, flowing the money in and out, you gain the value of having both pots of money continue to grow simultaneously. It's a really unique and cool thing. And especially over a 20 or 30 year period of time, it could be the difference in millions and millions of dollars, especially, you know, depending on at what level you're investing and saving. But I think the main thing here is, even if you're not using the investment optimizer, using this concept, you've got to focus on ways to make your savings more efficient. Save first. After you start saving and you've protected yourself and done the right things, then we've got to start bringing in that additional layer of efficiency.
And if you think about the reason why most people choose a regular savings account as that place where they're just saving up that money, is the liquidity and the safety of it, right? They're not putting it in a mutual fund because they don't want to lose money on it, right? But before they're ready to go and invest it in the other stuff. And so what this investment optimizer does is it provides those same two things, but then it creates growth that's tax-free and this additional efficiency that Christian just talked about, this arbitrage that we can create by creating value in multiple places at the same time. So
you can check out the 15-20-minute webinar on it on moneyinsights.net. We keep it up there because it's one of those core strategies that most of our clients use because it's just a no-brainer, right? If I'm going to be saving and investing in real estate, I might as well do it more efficiently. Rod and I do that with our own money, and most of our clients do it with theirs. And so it's just kind of one of those that we keep as part of the recipe because it just makes so much more sense than not doing. And, you know, it's pretty rare, if ever, that we can find times when it just, you know, doesn't fit.
Yeah, and we also did a podcast. We call it our Deep Dive.
Yes.
And so you can check that out as well.
Yep, that's a great point. Okay, the Deep Dive episode, which I think is number three. Should be number three episode. Okay, Rod, excellent. That's good on the investment optimizer. Number six, this is a big one, and anybody who makes money, and really, probably even if you don't make a lot of money, this is one you're becoming aware of, but you've got to acquire competent tax advice. And Rod, why don't you hit on this one first? We both had to deal with our own sets of challenges in regards to finding competent tax advice, but just talk about why this is such a vital component.
Yeah, and we see it a lot with it. And I think the best way to describe this is that most tax professionals out there are retro in their view, right? So in other words, you sit down with them and they say, okay, bring me all your documents for last year and we'll prepare a tax return for you. And inevitably in the course of that, you get to the end and they're like, hey, this is how much you owe. And you're like, I'd really rather not owe that. Can we make it better, right? Can we fix this? And they'll have some idea, but if this is sounding familiar,
The idea won't be a great one, though, by the way.
Yeah, it's like, well, oh, no, hey, good news. We can actually go back and still set money aside for a some sort of
You can put $6,000 yep, in an SAP. IRA or something. Yeah, yep, that's great.
Exactly. And but that's if that's always the answer that you get from your CPA, then please let us help you find someone who is proactive, who's forward-looking as it relates to tax planning. Because there are things that you can do now and moving forward to just make it better. And a lot of it aligns itself with our overall strategies with alternative investing and things like that. But if you don't have a tax professional in your corner who knows what they're doing and can help you, number one, find these deals, but then number two, make the most of these opportunities that just exist again for alternative investors, then please let us help you find someone.
So I worked with a CPA years ago for it was a relationship where he would refer clients to me, and he was let's put it this way, he was a reputable CPA. It was a reputable CPA firm in our area. They I felt like they did good work, and my mother-in-law was using this particular CPA. She ended up having a real estate deal happen. I remember sitting down in the office with this guy and her, and him just like pulling up on his TV a little spreadsheet, and he's like, "Oh yeah, it looks like this will be the taxes." He went through it in like 30 seconds with her, and then and said, "Oh, it looks like we should be good. You won't owe anything on this," and he moved on. And then they went through and they did it, and it just was a complete disaster. So. Wow. I guess the reason I'm saying that is that you've got to do more than just believe them too. So check references. You know what I love nowadays, Rod? This really cool search engine called Google. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Oh,
but
wow.
Yeah, they can do some cool stuff. In fact, I won't go near businesses today unless I see like really quality Google reviews, just because it's even referrals can be tough, because if it's someone that I already have a close relationship with, then I may not know what they look like, how that person performs I may not know how the person's going to perform the same as they would for their friends or family as they would for just some Joe Schmo off the street. And that maybe isn't a great way to put it, but all I can say is that I love Google. I love looking at Google reviews. It tells us so much more about what we, you know, generally what we need to know about other professionals. And I would say this is what I would do if I'm looking for a quality CPA. I would talk to people that I know, like, and trust and respect, maybe even people I look up to. And then after I've done that and I've gotten the referral, I would then go do the additional due diligence, both in terms of looking at information I can find about them through LinkedIn and other, you know, anything I can find on the internet. And then I would also interview them. And the combination of those things should help you to be able to get and acquire competent tax advice. If you want to do it really easily, just email Rod and I, and we can get you connected with someone that can help you on the tax side. Okay, Rod, did we touch on that enough? Oh, you
have
something.
Maybe just one last thought. Please. As you're doing that due diligence and maybe even interviewing them, or even interviewing the person that you're asking for the referral from, ask them some pretty simple questions, but they're critical. And number one is how's the experience for them been in this arena of proactive tax advice? Because I'll tell you what, I've asked CPAs.
They all tell you they're proactive, right?
They do. Yeah. Do you do proactive? Oh yeah, we do. Yeah.
Absolutely.
We'll sit down with our clients. We'll do this and that and the other thing. And so you have to take it to that next level. Okay. So give me some examples of some things, just, you know, that you've been working with your clients that you feel like are kind of somewhat like me. And again, if everything they have has to do with a retirement account or things like that, then that's not enough. That's just not enough.
Yeah. Those are really thoughtful, good questions. So I think asking both sides of it, those types of questions, is critical. And you're right. You've got to do more. You've got to dig a little deeper, because I can't remember. And I've probably asked this question to like 25, you know, accountants over the years. Like, and I've never had anyone tell me that they're not proactive.
Right.
And yet of those 25, like maybe two were actually what I would, you know, consider high quality, proactive type CPA firms.
Yeah. And then ask them how often they meet with their clients. And if it's once a year,
that's not enough.
That's not enough, because it's planning, right? It's planning. It's not just filing the return, because yes, that happens once a year. And so if you're meeting with your accountant less than once a year, then that's a big problem. But if it's only once a year, then that's not going to be enough either.
Okay. I think that's great advice. So make sure that tax advice is on the top of your list. And we didn't hit on this very much, but from just a pure numbers standpoint, I think we all know this, right? But let's say that I'm an investor. Well, especially if I'm a short-term investor, capital gains taxes are sitting at 35%, right? So if I'm a short-term capital gain, I'm talking about 35 plus whatever if there is a state tax. So I could be, you know, paying 40, 45% in taxes if I don't make the right decisions along the way. So again, don't want to beat the dead horse, but
and that changes
tax advice.
It changes. So you again, if you have a good tax person, they're keeping up with things, right? They know what Biden's doing, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll have ideas. Again, they'll have ideas and thoughts on how you can be smart, proactive, and get ahead of the curve, at least to the extent possible. Okay. Yeah. Good thoughts, Rod. Let's jump on to number 7. This is where it starts to get a little bit more fun. So up until this point, we haven't even started investing, right? Like how boring are the first 6 steps of our recipe, but they're very important. So
yeah, it's like flour and sugar and eggs, right?
Yeah. It's the flour, sugar, and you got to buy them. You've got to get out your measuring spoons and your cups and all that kind. You've got to make sure that you're doing the things in the right order. Now though, we're starting to get into the fun stuff. So this is where we, number 7, enter the alternative asset investing world. Rod, we talk about this all the time, right? This is one of our, one of our like most critical points. And I think the reason is really simple. Like I've been in this industry for 15, 16 years now. And my experience tells me that the people who move into alternative investing, they start to incorporate debt, leverage, those kind of velocity into the way that they invest. It's a complete and total game changer. And you would think, I don't know. There's probably 100 reasons as to why, but maybe the biggest reason is that there's not a lot of leverage that can be utilized inside of, you know, stocks, bonds, and mutual funds for the average person. And so your 10% return or your 10, you know, like, but when you go into the real estate world, I could get a 10% cash flow and get a 10% appreciation rate. Like I can just do a lot more. And by the way, I can do that without having my own money or very much of my own money in the deal. So the biggest reason I think that getting into the alternative asset space is important is because we're bringing leverage into the equation in a more impactful way. But there's also just a ton more from a opportunity standpoint, right? Like I could go into not just your stocks, bonds, mutual funds, but I could go into 15 different types of real estate. I could get into the precious metal space. I could get into note investing. I could get into, like, there's just so many places that you could go. Right now, I'm looking into a concept where we would invest into other people's books of business from an insurance perspective. So in the alternative space, there's just so many more opportunities that aren't available. And without exposing yourself to it, you just never know. You're sitting on the sideline without even knowing it.
And if you've done number 1, where you got educated and you're starting to look into these things, then, well, number 1, you're becoming more and more educated on the different opportunities that are out there, but you also know how to analyze it. And because you've surrounded yourself with other experienced people, then you can bounce ideas off of others, other like-minded people who can help you do that, right? Because to say, you know, get into the alternative space, well, you know, then your cousin Ernie can come over and say, hey, I've got this great deal that you should invest in. And we're not saying you should just automatically go with cousin Ernie, right? But
fair point, but, Rod. Don't maybe, just jump into the investment space for that, or the alternative space without doing a little bit of due diligence. But I will say this. Part of the battle is just getting in. Like, a lot of times when I hear the like really heavily focused real estate investors, a lot of times they'll say things like, your first deal doesn't even matter. It's about getting in. Now, I will say this. I don't agree quite to that level. I think getting in is an important, critical first step. But I also think doing the due diligence is just as important. But you can do both, right? You don't have to choose one or the other. You can do both.
Yeah, we have met with people who...
Sorry, go ahead, Rod.
Oh, I was just saying, we met with people who are perpetually doing due diligence. That's probably kind of the spirit of...
Analysis paralysis.
Yeah, the spirit of that comment is that at some point you do have to jump in. And so be smart about it. Pick a starting point and go for it.
Amen to
but
that.
But I cut you off.
No, you're good. I think we were hitting on the same point, so it works great.
Perfect.
Okay, so now that we've talked about entering the alternative asset space, I think most people understand why. By the way, if you check out our book, Money Insights for Physicians, we go through a little bit more in-depth version. We don't have exactly the same steps, but basically the same principles in more depth. So if you're wondering, okay, how do I get, I want to get a little bit more into this, then you can check out that book. Okay, number eight, I kind of blew this one up, Rod, because I already let the cat out of the bag. I talked about incorporating leverage, and that's what number eight is. It's incorporating leverage. I already hit on this, but just to kind of reiterate, leverage, in my opinion, is probably the greatest catalyst to building perpetual and significant wealth. And the reason is just because of math, right? Like math using leverage is significantly more valuable, has more possibility and opportunity to go up than not using leverage. And that's kind of like, that's it. At the core, it's just the math behind being able to create value without putting your money out of your pocket to get it.
Yeah, and I think on this one, I think there's a critical reason why we use the word leverage. Yes, we usually focus that on some sort of debt, right? Or other people using other people's money, right? OOP, you hear that a lot.
OPM. OPM. Other people's money, that's it.
Okay, yes, thank you.
I gotcha. Okay, keep going. OPM, Rod.
So we focus so much on this for the debt side, using other people's money, OPM. But then let's talk about it in terms of relying on others' expertise or things like that, right? Leverage takes on a lot of different forms. And the idea is that it doesn't have to be all your money. It doesn't have to be all your knowledge, expertise, experience. We rely on other people's money. We can also rely on other people's knowledge and expertise as well. Leverage.
Using not opium, Rod, not opium, OPM, just to be really clear. That's OPM.
Thank you for clarifying. Money. Yes.
You got it. Okay, number nine. We're rolling down to the final part of the recipe, the final step in the recipe. Number nine is to diversify income through multiple streams of income. Now, this is one that you'll learn the second you start getting educated, especially if you will read the books that we mentioned to read. But Rod, talk about why you feel like, based on your experience and working with so many wealthy people, why has it been so valuable for those people to diversify their income through multiple streams of income?
Yeah. Okay. So I think anybody who is familiar at all with investing and the kind of financial space, diversification is a huge word that's thrown around a lot, right? And I would say that it's maybe a little too narrow in the way that it's used most of the time. If you've heard it used in the context of, when you go buy stocks, bonds, mutual funds, you want to diversify across different stocks, different industries, all that kind of thing. What we're talking about here is the concept is similar. The idea is that if we are working to create streams of income that can replace our working income so that we can become financially free, then you wouldn't want to rely on any single stream of income, right?
Yeah, even if it's something blew
amazing,
up, you'd be in trouble.
In big trouble, right? All of a sudden you have nothing. So
and that's what people are staring at with their jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
At least frequently, right?
Yep, absolutely. So begin to create streams of income, and while you're still create, you know, working in your active field, creating active income, you turn that passive income around, and then you go and you use it to go generate another stream of income. And then it just builds. It's this snowball that continues to build. You have streams of income now coming in, and you turn that around using this concept of velocity we talked about. You turn that around and go and creating additional. So by the time you get there and you're able to, you have enough streams of income to replace that active income, now you're ready to be financially free. You kind of, everything goes on your terms now. If anything happens with any one of those streams of income, you're still okay because you have time to repair that, fix it up, get that stream of income going again. But in the meantime, you have these other streams that are coming in and taking care of things.
Yes, you can pivot and replace, right? If you just have one, it's pretty hard to pivot. And that's what number 10 for us is, to make it more passive. So here's kind of my philosophy on business and building wealth. Whether it's active or passive, and specifically whether, let's talk about an active situation. So if I was actively investing, let's say I was actively investing in real estate, it could be in a business or anything else, in order to build wealth, in order to maximize my ability to build wealth, I have to create the income, I have to create the value, I have to create the revenue mm-hmm. from it, but then I have to be able to stop trading time for money. So in order to make it more passive, I have to build systems, processes around those things. So whether it's investing, whether it's your business, whatever it is, the key to wealth building is to make sure that you're not trading time for money. So the second that you realize that you have to do all the work in order to create the revenue or income, then that means that there's some real work that you can be doing to kind of take it to the next level. So for us, when we build Money Insights, we continue to build it up and create more of a stream. We build more people within the organization so that for me as the president of the company, I can step away more and more over time to do not just the things that I do with Money Insights, but I can be focused on doing other things at the same time. This applies across the board, whether it's business or real estate or investing. The key here is to not trade time for money, to make it more passive. I probably said the same thing three times there, Rod. What do you have to add to it?
Well, that is the key. If it's going to be financial freedom, but the only way the revenue is generated is if you show up,
then it's not freedom, right?
It's not, right? And I think maybe one of the keywords that you use that I really would focus on is yes, it can be people, but it's also processes.
Yes. Yes, it doesn't have to be people.
Technology being
You're
what
right.
it is,
could be,
right? A lot of things.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yep.
Some but people don't want to deal with other people, right? And that's totally reasonable. Like you said, we have all these incredible tools at our disposal. It could mm-hmm. be one person with really great systems in place that don't require other people, and that could be a way to make it completely passive for them. Or, you know, 90% passive or something like that. Yeah. I think that's a really, really good point you brought up. Yeah. Okay, Rodney, aside from the 10 pieces of the puzzle that we put out for today, is there anything you feel like we missed in our recipe? I mean, okay, so here's the deal. I made the recipe and Rod just had to like live with my recipe. So I'm asking Rod, did I miss any parts to the 10-step recipe that make up financial freedom that you can think of?
I mean, I think it's there, and especially because you're surrounding yourself with other people with experience and or expertise, that you don't have to become the expert in everything. If you're surrounding yourself with people, you're building a team, whether it be partners that you're investing with, whether it be the legal, accounting, you know, those different pieces, whether it be people who are experienced, and it's just kind of like that whole tribe concept of surrounding yourself with like-minded people, that can make up for so many potential issues and even actual issues as you come across them, and being able to mitigate them and overcome them and whatnot, that can make a big difference. So that's, you really covered yourself with that, because if you can build the right team, then the rest
it all comes together, right?
Yeah, we're gonna
makes
have some
it a
amazing
whole lot
cake.
Easier. Yeah. Okay. So here's what I'm going to do. To close this thing up, I'm going to do a quick recap of our 10 steps. I keep saying 10 steps. It's a recipe, Rod. It's not steps. This is a recipe. I guess you have to take steps in order to,
recipe,
make a recipe.
Yeah.
But either way, okay, 10-step recipe gets us to financial success, financial freedom. Number one, get educated. Two, start saving money. Three, surround yourself with experience. Protect yourself is number four. Five, maximize opportunity fund. Number six, acquire competent tax advice. Seven, enter the alternative asset investing world. Number eight, incorporate leverage. Nine, diversify income. And really, I should just say diversify through multiple streams of income. And number 10, make it more passive. I think that's a good recipe. This has been another episode of the Money Insights podcast. Check us out at moneyinsights.net. Leave us a review if you think we're any good. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Money Insights podcast. To learn more about the financial and business strategies discussed in this show, visit moneyinsights.net.